Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jackie Leiden in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Perfection. Society celebrates those who strive for it, who sweat the details, who don't settle for second best. But perfectionism, psychologists increasingly say, can have a not-so-perfect dark side. Compulsive behavior, depression, eating disorders. Its spillover can lead to poisoned office environments and stressed-out families. A little imperfection might be just what the doctor ordered. This hour on Point, the perils of perfectionism. And joining me now from Toronto, Ontario, is Gordon Flett, professor of psychology and associate dean at York University. He's author of Perfectionism, Theory, Research, and Treatment, and he was cited in a recent New York Times story about perfectionism. Professor Flett is one of the world's leading researchers on the subject. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jackie. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. And joining me now in the studio is Heather Thompson Brenner, a psychology professor at Boston University and a program director at BU's Center for Anxiety and Related Disorders. She's a specialist in eating disorders and sees many patients who display perfectionist traits. Heather, welcome to On Point.
Thank you.
Gordon Flett, I wonder, since you are the author of the book, as it were, would you run us through the classical definition, the clinical definition of perfectionism?
Sure. Well, somebody who's a perfectionist is striving for an absolute, doing well is not good enough for these people. They want to be absolutely perfect, and falling short of that, even falling short of it by a little bit, is very distressing for them. And one of the problems is they get very little satisfaction sometimes from what other people would see as remarkable achievement. And a key thing to realize is there's a motivational side to this, where they feel that they don't just want to be perfect, they feel that they must be perfect, they absolutely must be, and that translates into sort of a relentlessness about the pursuit. So it's important to distinguish it from, striving for excellence or wanting to do very well. These are people are pushing it farther and wanting to be absolutely perfect.
So these are people if they got 98% and not 100% are totally depressed.
Yeah, it would depend, though. Certainly, they take maybe a little pleasure, but they'd still be very frustrated by not doing that. And sometimes we find that people with these remarkable levels of achievement still find a way to be self-critical and saying, well, it shouldn't have taken them so long to get that kind of a grade. They should have had it come easier.
Heather, you actually practice, and one of the things that just leapt out at me is how can you tell when these traits are traits of perfectionism and not something else, say, obsessive-compulsive disorder or the sorts of eating disorders you treat?
Right. Well, perfectionism is really a component of a lot of other disorders that we treat. So somebody can be diagnosed with obsessive-compulsive disorder or with anorexia nervosa, but what is really fueling the disorder is the desire to be really perfect in some of these domains.
What's the newest research on this subject revealing? I mean, I have to confess that when I first heard about it, I thought, well, this is America. We're a nation of strivers here. You're told from, cradle to grave, always do your best. So how did this even evolve as perhaps a negative thing?
I'm interested to hear what Dr. Flett has to say. I think that one important thing about understanding what is clinical perfectionism or what the problems with perfectionism are is that they don't always lead to good outcomes. So one of the big problems is that if you get really bogged down in your anxiety about whether you're going to fail and whether you're paying attention to every detail perfectly along the way, actually people begin to avoid the very thing that they care about doing well at and procrastinating and getting bogged down in little details, and actually doesn't lead to a good outcome.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'd like to add that it's a key point. One of the biggest debates in the literature right now is there an adaptive side to perfectionism, and that's what a lot of the research has been looking at most recently. And we have to acknowledge that it's often rewarded and sometimes required depending on somebody's circumstances, job setting, or whatever. But the key question to ask there is, would a high level of achievement motivation or conscientiousness yield the same benefits? And what I like to ask people who have bought into the need to be perfect is the question, you know, at what cost does it come? And some of our work more recently looking at relationship costs in terms of being with a spouse or a partner who's demanding absolute perfection and can be kind of very critical about not measuring up. But also, importantly, you know, what kind of health costs might there be? Because we know that perfectionism is linked consistently with chronic stress, and then chronic stress can be related to so many different ailments. So people might be successful as a result of it, but they might not feel successful in their own eyes, but it might come with some significant costs as well.
Mm-hmm. Gordon, would you tell us how long ago this was broken out as an independent diagnosis? You've obviously done a lot on it, and when it was separated from other disorders.
Right. Well, perfectionism per se hasn't been incorporated as a disorder within the various diagnostic systems, but the work on it as a multidimensional aspect started really around 1990 with work by Randy Frost in Massachusetts at Smith College and some of our work. And what this recognized that there's many different facets to perfectionism, and people are overly concerned with making mistakes or are really feeling a pressure from others to be perfect are the ones who might be most prone to anxiety or depression or some of these physical ailments. Hmm. The actual concept itself, though, goes way back to classic theorists like Alfred Adler, who would be the most relevant person here, who talked about striving for perfection as a way of overcompensating for feelings of inferiority. So you're trying to make up for things that you see as a deficit in yourself by striving for absolutes, and one of the difficulties is in doing that you might be exposing yourself to risk for some of these other problems, you know, eating disorders, anxiety, and so on.
Right. I think that's an excellent point. I'd like to add to that that there's, you know, the research asks the question, well, do the perfectionistic standards, once you have perfectionistic standards, you feel bad about yourself because it's pretty much impossible to live up to those. So the kind of low self-esteem could be a result of having those standards. But then on the other hand, it's possible that you started off feeling bad about yourself because of experiences you had in your life, and then striving this hard to be perfect is a way of compensating. And pretty much you can end up, no matter where it started, in kind of a vicious cycle.
Hmm. Is there a gender component? Do women exhibit it more? Can you detect it in children?
I think that there are gender components to it. I think that the most obvious gender components are kind of because of the way that society sort of defines success differently for the different sexes and the domains that people tend to get involved in, that the different genders tend to express their perfectionism in different domains. So eating disorders is you know, largely experienced by women. So being perfectionistic about being as thin as possible or eating correctly, whereas sort of achievement striving is common to both sexes, but there are particular types of achievement that men sometimes value or pursue more than women.
We're getting a lot of calls from listeners. So let's take a call from Bob, who's calling from Norfolk, Virginia. Hello, Bob. Welcome to On Point.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm just really curious. I have a dear friend who's a woman about my age. She's in her late 30s. And I'm wondering if this whole complex doesn't affect women a little bit more because of society's perceptions as to what they need to be physically, not, you know, including professionally now, if it's not kind of a multi-whammy against women. I mean, this woman is, by all accounts, you know, very attractive, stunning, extraordinarily intelligent, but she's bulimic, she never does good enough in her mind, and she's successful professionally, and I'm just wondering if it doesn't lean more towards the feminine side of things being more affected by the syndrome than men.
I think that's a really interesting question, and the kind of struggle and pain that you're describing is something that we see a lot. I think that for women definitely have the struggle that has to do with body image, which is particularly difficult because it's impossible to attain a perfect body ideal. And it's actually, in many ways, very difficult to control what you eat or what size your body is. So being perfectionistic about this thing that is so difficult to achieve, in addition to then feeling like you also have to achieve in the workplace, can be extraordinarily burdensome. But I think on the side of men's pain for a moment, it's true also that men have been expected forever to base their self-worth on kind of demonstrable success in the world, and that it's difficult for them to separate sometimes their sense of self-worth from what they're able to achieve. Do you have any thoughts, Dr. Flett?
Yes, I wanted to echo that, there is this direct link between the sense of self-worth and attainment of those standards, and there's a constant checking to see where one is, and also comparing with other people is another way that this gets manifest. There hasn't been a lot of research on gender differences, but certainly it is the case that it's manifest probably in different ways for men versus women. And some of our most recent work is looking at perfectionism in the context of new parents, both mothers and fathers. And we find that there's a subset of parents who are really buying into the need to be a perfect parent in the sense that you can never make a mistake, and they're sort of hyper-vigilantly appraising how they're doing in a role where they may have absolutely no experience whatsoever.
Yeah.
And parents are putting a lot of pressure on themselves, but this is something that would probably likely apply a bit more to new mothers than fathers, but we find that it also applies to fathers as well, and especially if they are very concerned with how they appear to others and whether they're living up to the societal expectations and images.
This is On Point. I'm Jackie Leiden in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about perfectionists and the negative results of trying to be too perfect. Joining me from Toronto is Gordon Flett, professor of psychology and associate dean at York University. He is one of the world's leading researchers on perfectionism. And joining me here in the studio is Heather Thompson Brenner, a psychology professor at Boston University and a program director at BU's Center for Anxiety and Related Disorders, and she works with perfectionist patients. Dr. Flett, could you perhaps outline for us textbook examples from the greater world about whom we might know, or perhaps patients you've seen? Are there names in the news or world of entertainment?
There's many famous perfectionists, and I really admire these people going public with their problems, because one thing with perfectionists is that they really feel a stigma about seeking help because they feel that they'll be exposed or humiliated. And when people go public with their problems, that certainly inspires others to seek help. Some familiar people, most recent example would probably be the actress Ashley Judd, who in the summer of 2006 talked about her 47 days in treatment for depression, and she attributed it directly to adopting a perfectionistic way of dealing with a sense of chaos and uncertainty in her childhood. Another classic example, someone very famous, is Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, who talks about this extensively in his autobiography, Wouldn't It Be Nice. He said that he became perfectionistic for two reasons. One is he was compensating for being deaf in one ear and trying to strive to compensate for that, but also he had a father, Murray Wilson, who was very demanding and somewhat abusive, and said, don't bother doing anything unless it can be absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And there's many other examples. Another well-known case was back in 2003, the French chef Bernard Loiseau sadly committed suicide when his restaurant was downgraded, that went against his need to be absolutely perfect. Mm-hmm. And in all of these cases, here's people who are remarkably achievement-oriented and talented, but don't seem to be able to get a sense of satisfaction in their own accomplishments and enough to maintain a level of self-esteem that will help buffer them from some of the other troubles that they've experienced.
Mm-hmm. Heather, as Gordon Flett was talking, I was just thinking stigma, of course, plays such a negative role in preventing people from coming to terms with any sort of mental illness. Mm-hmm. But I think it might be one thing to be diagnosed as bipolar or schizophrenic or with OCD, And I wouldn't think that perfectionism would have quite the same negative stigma attached to it, and wouldn't be quite the same hurdle.
Well, I think that people feel reluctant to talk about it for more. There is a stigma associated with it, which is a little bit more, I think, of the sense that perfectionists are unpleasant people on some level. That because they're detail oriented or because they're rigid and their standards are maybe high for other people, that you wouldn't want to necessarily self-identify as a perfectionist because it doesn't sound like a great thing to be. But that's more in the sort of regular social world. I think clinically it's hard to admit to having these kinds of problems because perfectionists, even when they're very successful, they have an interior feeling of deep shame about not living up to what their standards are. Mm-hmm. And to identify those standards as too high and as their behavior as sort of maybe okay the way that it is both giving up on those goals, which they're very, very attached to, and also sort of accepting a kind of lower status.
Well, the great irony, I'm not perfect for a perfectionist. Let's take a call. Harry is calling from Sumner, South Carolina. Welcome to On Point, Harry.
Hi. I was wondering if there's a relationship between this perfectionism and a kind of intolerance that would not allow somebody to enjoy a vacuum cleaner that had some small defect or anything that a child of theirs did that was a little bit less than perfect. I suggested to at least one member of my family that they should never consider LASIK surgery because it is not perfected, and it would, if it weren't just up to their standard, it would introduce kind of another pain point in their life.
But I think your earlier point was that not being able to take pleasure in a child's achievements if they were deemed by the perfectionist not to be the best. Gordon Flett, Heather, yes. Thompson-Brenner, what do you think?
Well, we certainly see some of that with parents who are striving for perfection, not only in themselves but in their children. And one of the things that our work shows is that parents who are striving for perfection tend to have children who are also striving for perfection. But it's too easy to look around and find flaws in terms of the level. And one of the concerns is that kids are being pushed and asked to do too much at too high a level too soon. You know, there I've encountered many children who have achieved at a very high level, but they've also developed a great resentment because they feel that it's not because of their own reasons. They've been feeling pushed along and wanting to do it to satisfy parental standards. But the problem is that this approximating high achievement then leads to the bar being raised even higher. Mm-hmm. And this is the concept we've studied called socially prescribed or socially imposed perfectionism, the idea that, you know, you're being asked to be perfect, and then when you do well, the standard gets raised even higher.
Yeah. I'd like to add to that, too. I agree. We see that all the time. And it's a tough situation for those kids because they're kind of triple whammied in the sense that they've inherited some of these detail-oriented perfectionistic tendencies, which can be heritable. And then they have, you know, the parent modeling those tendencies, and then they're the kind of kid who really wants to do well, so they really take in the messages that their parents give them. But on the flip side, noticing that sometimes can get people to get help, whereas there was a mother, I know of some people who are mothers who have those standards for themselves and want their house to be perfectly clean and clean for 2 days if somebody's coming over, and feel okay about that. It's fairly what we call egocentric. That feels legitimate to them. But when they see their children begin to exhibit the same tendencies and also feel like every piece of clothing has to be perfectly cleaned before they go to school and that they can't do things that they're going to fail at, like be on the soccer team, then those parents sometimes, when they see their children's distress, are actually motivated to help themselves to give a different kind of model for their kids.
Let's take another call. Nicole is calling from Marblehead, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Nicole.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This is a very interesting topic for me because recently I've been really trying to let go on the topic of being perfect. I feel as a working mother, you've mentioned it, the body image, the needs at work, the needs to keep the house up to par, the needs to get the do everything possible for the kids. There's just an incredible amount of pressure, and it's really hard to find balance. My husband and I joke often because he is a very participatory father and very involved, but I think dads are lauded a lot more for their efforts than women are for their efforts as mothers and as professionals. At work, I've been explicitly told not to bring in conflicts with obligations with children, and he's almost applauded when he says, "Oh, I have to leave early to pick up my daughter." And the same thing with participation in the schools. Mothers are constantly emailed or asked for more participation or volunteerism, and the one thing that the dad does is just incredibly exciting and great for the classroom.
Okay, thanks, Nicole. Well, What do you think about that? I'm also very, very intrigued by Gordon Flett's remarks about new parents and all the standards now for parents. Nicole was just referring to double standards.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother used to say, you know, back when people had big families, they just didn't have time for all this obsessive stuff about kids. And I have to say, as the oldest of a big family, you know, we kind of pitched in with it. I mean, it was just a very, people did not sort of hyper-judge in the same ways.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, first of all, I wanted to thank Nicole for her comments, because that's really the one area that I think needs to be expanded from a research perspective, and maybe the source of whatever gender differences there are. People talk extensively about the superwoman syndrome and getting involved in multiple roles, and I think that that's one of the ways that perfectionism really gets manifest in terms of giving yourself 100% commitment to all these different things. And not surprisingly, then we see in research that there's a link with burnout and fatigue that makes it impossible to keep striving at that level, and that's where the health problems come in. But I too am intrigued by the notion of, you know, how do people get to the point where they want to be an absolutely perfect parent? Is it media portrayals, or the see what happens when somebody makes a mistake and how people jump on them for those mistakes? It's just an added pressure that's not realistic. You know, I always think about, for instance, a parent who's striving for absolute perfection, is totally committed, and then there's something, some issue with the child in terms of development or maybe a difficult temperament. And you, perfectionists are people who tend to like control, but you'll find yourself in situations where that simply isn't possible. And then these people will have a tendency to get quite self-critical and not have much parenting esteem, so that then they might avoid being engaged in some of the pleasurable activities that could evolve out of the role.
Yeah.
And it's a real concern for those, because a lot of perfectionists sort of suffer in silence. They don't talk to other people. They put on a happy face, and people may not know the turmoil that they're experiencing.
What do you think, Heather, about this nature versus nurture? Are we born perfectionists, or does the cultural conditioning in whatever way trigger it, or at least aggravate it?
I think it's pretty clearly a combination of different factors. So there are, you know, the sort of across the board, looking at how heritable sort of consistent personality traits, observable personality traits like perfectionism, how heritable are they? Sort of genetics tends to account for, you know, maybe about a third, give or take, of the expression of it in an adult. And we do know that, like, for people who have eating disorders who are very perfectionistic, that other members of their family, even who don't have eating disorders, also show sort of perfectionistic tendencies. So it does run in families. Pursuing the achievement orientation, getting confirmation, reward for having that kind of perfectionistic standards, being punished for not pursuing those standards within your family and then within the wider culture, clearly encourages that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then I think there are you know, particular behaviors that perfectionists get into, which is what behavior therapy targets to try to turn the perfectionism around. So doing a lot of very explicit comparing of your success with other people's success, or in devoting inordinate amount of time to trying to achieve success, all sort. There are many behaviors that contribute to making perfectionism worse that you may be able to turn around.
All right. Let's take another call. Frida is calling from Winchester, Massachusetts. Hello, Frida.
Hi. Yes, I'm interested in your topic. I've worked in the past as a therapist and also a little personal experience with some perfectionist tendencies. And I'm just thinking a little bit along the lines they've been speaking about, kind of an anthropological viewpoint, that as what we need to do for survival in our world today is so much less connected to, you know, the earth and gardening and farming and that kind of thing, it seems like our vision gets more narrowed and more perfectionist. And I know for myself, just something like gardening really helps me get out of that mindset. So I just am commenting on kind of our general disconnect from nature and kind of what seems to be more perfectionism.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Frida.
I think that's a great point. I mean, we've hearkened to it a couple of times, that one of the things that can really help get out of a perfectionistic mindset is to be engaged in activities that bring you pleasure, that don't have a goal orientation to them. And it's pretty easy if you are a perfectionist to kind of try to do that, like, okay, I'm going to be a gardener, and then apply your perfectionistic standards there, and then you're going to be the best gardener, and suddenly you're going to write a gardening book, and you're going on tours and looking at your neighbor's yards sort of askance. But the goal when you're trying to get out of the perfectionistic mindset is really to do what you're saying and be much more connected to the pleasurable and non-striving aspects of that.
Okay. Steve is calling from Hull, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Steve.
Hello. I would like to suggest that perfectionism might in many cases be related to cognitive difficulties that some people might have. When you think about how we determine standards, usually I think there's kind of a double standard in almost any sphere of activity. One is the thing you can really do, which we determine sort of socially, and the other is measured much more objectively, and that's what's perfection. And if you happen to be a person, say, like somebody with Asperger's syndrome, those people don't have very good access to all the information that might be around them socially. What they can see is the objectively determined standard, which is the perfection standard, and it's kind of a refuge, because if they try to go for less than perfection, they're very prone to making mistakes and being rebuffed at getting bad experiences out of trying to work at levels short of perfection, because they don't understand what the standard really is, because they're not getting those measures.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Gordon Flood, I'd like to ask you what the study shows. We're going to have to continue your answer into the next segment, but what's the first question you ask in some of these studies?
First question we ask is just how much somebody is suffering, and whether the perfection is stemming from themselves or seen as coming from outside themselves in terms of other people.
This is On Point. I'm Jackie Lydon, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the pursuit of perfection and the psychological consequences of trying to be perfect. We're joined by Heather Thompson-Brenner, a psychology professor at Boston University and a program director at BU's Center for Anxiety and Related Disorders. She works with patients, and from Toronto by Gordon Flett, professor of psychology and associate dean at York University, one of the world's leading researchers on perfectionism. And Gordon Flett, just before the break, we're asking what the classic symptoms might be, and I want to ask Heather about her practice as well, but you said that you looked at how much people are suffering.
Yeah, you have to realize that a lot of the people who are perfectionists are ones who put on, as I said, this very pleasant atmosphere. They try to not let any sign show that they're suffering in terms of being anxious or or depressed, and other people might not really realize just how much difficulty they're experiencing. And one of the byproducts, in addition to, you know, is it involving the self versus others, is to what extent are the standards being used as a source of self-evaluation and leading to excessive self-criticism. Perfectionists often tend to be very hard on themselves. Sometimes they use those same standards for other people and can be hard on other people as well. But they do tend to be very self-critical and get into this mindset. And, you know, for instance, if they make a mistake in some public performance situation, they might be thinking about this for, you know, weeks afterwards, going over how they could have done better, and but really beating themselves up along the way in terms of their sense of self-esteem.
Mm-hmm. You know, a friend recently told me about a critical parent who had criticized the way this person ate a salad over Thanksgiving, and I thought, that's remarkable. I mean, because you could theoretically criticize about anything, mm-hmm. of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've been doing some recent work on the link between perfectionism and maltreatment, and it's the parental criticism that comes out. I once witnessed an example of this, waiting for our daughter to come out of a music test written in an auditorium, and there were some parents who were standing at the window watching their child write the test for the entire 2 hours. And then when the child came out, just started yelling at the kid for presumably not doing it fast enough. It was hard to tell exactly what the problem there was. But it's important to realize, too, that sometimes perfectionism evolves not just from the harsh parental component. Some people have parents who say, "I was never critical. I never did this, but it just seemed to be something that, you know, the child wanted." And in those cases, sometimes it's the peer environment as well. You can get into a hyper-competitive peer environment where everybody is striving to one-up, and people can really buy into that.
Mm-hmm. What can be done to help people, Heather? They come to you presumably mm-hmm. distressed. They want help. Mm-hmm. So how do you get out of it?
Well, there are a couple of different treatment approaches, and some of them are more traditional and I think kind of time-tested, and others are sort of the newer variety and being tested right now. I mean, I think that Dr. Flett has been talking this sort of considering where this perfectionism came from, so understanding that the people in your immediate environment had standards for you and made you feel bad in particular ways that you can maybe carry forward into the future is an important thing to pay attention to. But then there's also these sort of cognitive and behavioral strategies that I think can be integrated with that that are a little bit more about just really trying to get in with the symptoms and change them around. So if there was, say one of these people who was kind of conducting her home life in a perfectionistic way and was not only, you know, trying to do well for her children and have her children's clothes be clean, but was organizing everything by color and by alphabet and by season and was also sort of, maybe like organizing all of her shopping lists in such a way that she'd go through Target in the most effective way so that her shopping list would say, you know, what was in aisle one and aisle two, and she'd progress only systematically and had these very complicated and perfectionistic strategies for dealing with these home tasks. She might not be sure that she wants to change those things first when she comes. It's working for her, and she might argue, well, going through Target in that order really means that I get out of the store faster. So we might do some sort of behavioral experiments about that. First of all, a kind of cost-benefit analysis like we were talking about, because life always sort of gets in the way of executing your plan. So it could happen that you're in Target and you thought that the snowsuits were going to be in aisle one, but it turned out they were all out of those size snow seats, you had to go to the child section. And if that causes a huge amount of distress, then that's definitely a cost to trying to proceed that way.
Mm-hmm.
But then we might ask people to deliberately try to do it differently and see what that feels like, while anticipating that that might cause some discomfort, but really say, okay, now I want you to try to make a deliberate mistake in your sort of organization of the store.
And see if that
causes bad outcomes.
Panic.
Yeah.
Let's hear from some of our callers. Whitney is calling from Portland, Maine. Welcome to On Point, Whitney.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am a perfectionist, and it has always been very important to me to be successful. And one thing that I've noticed, and I wanted to ask if you had any insights about this, is that I find that when I achieve a measure of success. I'm an artist, so, you know, if a painting sells or I get into a new gallery or a show, you know, my family and friends are all very excited and supportive, and this is wonderful. And I feel sad, and I have no idea why this is happening, but I don't tend to be able to feel the pleasure that people around me expect me to feel. I feel sort of sad. I've reached this goal. It's a wonderful thing, and I'm sad.
Now, that's a very interesting phenomenon you're describing in terms of your personal experiences. Mm-hmm. The same sort of thing happened in the case of Virginia Woolf, who, you know, sadly ended up killing herself. And her bouts of depression were timed to completion of works, major works that are mm-hmm. still, you know, honored today. There seems to be something as well. My colleague Paul Hewitt at University of British Columbia has a clinical practice where he focuses on perfectionists. And he's also recounted to me that some people who are particularly distressed are ones who have bought into this view that if they're only perfect, if they achieve at a perfect mm-hmm. level, then people will love them, people will respect them, you know, all these things that are going to happen. And then they discover that they have this remarkable achievement, mm-hmm. and then everything didn't change magically like they had bought into. And they get quite distressed at that point because much of their personal identity and striving has been focused on attaining that goal and then thinking that something else will happen. Mm-hmm. But also, when we're in the pursuit of something that we're enjoying, you know, there's an excitement and arousal to it, and it's like finishing an excellent book that you don't ever want to see end. So mm-hmm. so that could be part of it. But, you know, people at that point, though, who are perfectionists tend to then go right on to the next pursuit to try mm-hmm. and get back into that frame of mind.
Another thing that I totally agree with that description, another thing that people describe is feeling like when they have rehearsed it so much in their mind, this moment, seen it from so many different angles and how great it would be, that they don't actually feel like it's really happening when it happens. That something about having lived it so many times in the imagination makes it feel not real.
It's interesting. Let's take one more call. Phil is calling from Williamsville, New York. Hi there, Phil.
Hi. Excellent program. I'm a psychologist, and I'd like to add something from my experience. Working with obsessive personalities, perfectionist personalities, I find that there's a component of the personality that is often overlooked, and that is kind of secondary, almost perverse narcissism. Mm-hmm. The individual who is perfectionistic has the thought that he or she has the ability, should be able to do things in a perfect way. When I pointed out, it's been effective in pointing out to this person that he or she is not allowing himself or herself to see the as other people, he or she is human, and every human makes errors, and the people I found very often haven't thought of this, the idea that I say it's perverse because they have this feeling of very low self-esteem, but on the other hand, they think they can do things perfectly that human error does not apply to them.
All right. Thank you, Phil. The link between narcissism and perfectionism?
Well, I think it's a great question. It's a big question. And other element of perfectionism that we haven't gotten into a lot is that it can really be experienced as a moral set of standards, that it's not just that you're going to do well and you're going to achieve, but that there's something sort of inherently good about those standards, and that other people who don't hold those standards are not being good people. And I guess I see that as related to the narcissistic issue.
Yeah, I want to add that there's some evidence of criminal activities of people who have justified it by saying, well, other people haven't lived up to this excessive standard that
right.
everybody should have, so they need to be paid back.
Right.
Narcissism and perfectionism is something that gets looked at in terms of other oriented perfectionism, people tend to be narcissistic, tend to be very demanding and expect other people to be striving to be as special as they are. And we have found that people who have a narcissistic element to their perfectionism often are the ones who are least aware of the impact that they're having on the people around them. They don't seem to have the insight that other people aren't enjoying that same pursuit and pressure that they themselves are striving for.
Mm-hmm. And boundaries, of course, would also, I think, get tested. We're talking about perfectionism. Let's go to another caller. Michael is calling from Somerville, Massachusetts.
Hi, Jackie, and hi to everybody else. Thanks for taking my call. My concern, I really appreciate the program about perfectionism, but my concern is that you're not talking about the neurobiological components of, you know, some of the diagnoses that are being discussed, like obsessive compulsive disorder or, you know, any of the eating disorders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I was thinking the same thing. Are you knowledgeable about these areas?
I'm very knowledgeable. Actually, I live with obsessive compulsive disorder.
Mm-hmm.
I live very successfully with it.
Mm-hmm. Great.
But I do know that in the process of being, you know, diagnosed and sharing the information with friends, and, you know, there's a lot of tossing of the idea around of perfectionism and having it applied, and, you know, people say, well, you're a perfectionist, why don't you just, you know, stop being a perfectionist?
Mm-hmm.
And the strong neurobiological component mm-hmm. is a great part of, you know, the behavior.
Yeah.
And dealing with not only the idea of perfectionism, but dealing with the behavior that leads to it.
Right, right. So there are, I think you're referring to the fact that there are multiple studies to suggest that neuropsychological functioning works a little bit differently for people who have obsessive compulsive disorder, and that there are particular kinds of patterns in brain functioning. And then maybe also that we have seen sort of serotonin elevations in people who are compulsive and who are perfectionistic and have eating disorders. And that those are definitely important parts of the potentially the etiology and then also the treatment of those.
Let's try and squeeze in one more call. I hope that answers Michael's question. Jonathan is calling from Cheshire, Connecticut.
Hi. I just have a question, and I wonder to some extent how much we're making a value judgment. I mean, obviously, at one end of the spectrum, there are people with significant pathologies, OCD, eating disorders, and things like that. But how about folks who just the run-of-the-mill perfectionists? I mean, they like their gardens to be orderly. They like their clothes to be folded neatly. It gives them some sense of comfort. Are we not, to some extent, making a value judgment that to some degree this is bad when it may in fact just be how people are?
Can I ask, Jonathan, do you like your clothes to be folded neatly and the garden tidy? Boy, the garden is a tough one. Do you feel like you have those things?
Not particularly. I might consider myself a pretty highly evolved slob, but in certain aspects of my work, I would just, you know, expect it to be just so. But it doesn't. I don't think I'm functioning in anything else on a normal level. And I'm just. It's not particularly me per se. But we're assuming that somebody who shops a certain way, there's something wrong with that.
Okay. Thanks. Gordon Flatt, you had talked a little bit earlier, one of the things being boundaries, how the perfectionist treats others. This becomes really problematic.
Yeah, and that pertains to the comment in terms of, you know, is it something that other people are being exposed to as well and feeling that they're being targeted for and criticized for. But one thing that's important to tell your listeners is that, you know, it's natural to be wanting to be perfect in one or two areas. It's when somebody wants to be perfect across the board in virtually every life sphere, and they're continually pursuing it. And, you know, if someone's enjoying their perfectionism, getting satisfaction, that could be something that's working for them. The key questions then become, are the people around them enjoying it? If it's not focused on others, then maybe it's not so bad. But then there's also the concern about, is there a health risk in terms of relentlessness to the striving? But in one or two areas, it's natural to want to have things just right and to enjoy them.
Right. And that there's nothing wrong about having high standards or doing things effectively. That to go, that if you are able to do things that you care about, so anxiety isn't keeping you from doing that thing because you're so anxious about doing it perfectly, and you can finish it, and then you can enjoy the results of having finished it. Then that those kinds of high standards, I think, are great things. And you know, the woman that I was talking about in the store, the problem is, I mean, in fact, shopping quickly is a great thing. You can go on to do other stuff. The problem is how much distress it causes when you're not able to live up to those perfectionistic standards.
Well, I want to thank you both very, very much for being with us. Thanks a lot. Heather Thompson Brenner, who directs the Eating Disorders Program at Boston University Center for Anxiety and Related Disorders, thank you. And Gordon Flett, professor of psychology and associate dean at York University in Toronto. We just want to mention that On Point host Tom Ashbrook is recuperating from successful bypass surgery that took place on November 14th. Tom is recovering very well and plans to be back in this host chair at On Point on January the 2nd. And all of us here wish him the very best. I'm Jackie Leiden. I want to say what a pleasure it's been being with all of you this week. And you are listening to WBUR and NPR's show, On Point.